Welcome to a bonus episode of the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am very excited to welcome back a longtime friend to the Broadway Radio Show, Tony-nominated lyricist and librettist, Bill Russell. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Bill.
Really great to see you.
Yeah, it's been quite a long time. Bill, obviously, you may know him for his Tony-nominated work on Sideshow, one of my all-time favorite musicals. But he's also written many, many other musicals, including Pageant and Lucky Duck and The Last Smoker in America and Unexpected Joy. And he's here to talk about a brand new musical that he has written that's having a little bit of a kind of a sneak peek at the Laurie Beachman Theater every Monday in November, which would be November 3rd, 10th, 17th, and 24th, which we will jump into very quickly here. It's called Has Anyone Seen My Mind? Talk about what the show is about and how it even came about. I mean, where did this concept come from, and how long has this been bouncing around in your, pardon my terminology here, but how long has this been bouncing around in your creative mind?
Well, this is built out of these musings I've been writing for decades. And it's my sort of go-to form because musicals take so friggin' long and you're dependent on a lot of other people, which can be great, but they do take a long time. And these I can finish relatively quickly. I'm not dependent on anyone else to finish them except how my brain is working. And every year, at the end of the year, I send out five of these to a list of longtime friends and people who've played an important part in that particular year. And one of the people on that list for decades is our director, Justin Ross Cohen. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, he called me to say that he'd been reading one of that year's pieces over the phone to friends, and the reaction was just really enthusiastic. And he said, I think we should build a show around these. And I was like, wow. I mean, the idea had crossed my mind, but I had never followed through. So I said, let me send you what I have, which was over 500 pieces. And I suggested that we each choose 25, and we matched on 13 of them, and those became the basis for the show. Mm-hmm. The songs, there's 9 songs, many of those lyrics came from the musings, because I have several composers on my list, and sometimes they set these and send me the results without even telling me they're going to do so, and which is always a thrilling surprise. So we put that together. We did an industry reading 2 years ago now. Then last January, we did a short run at the Genesius Theater in Reading, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And now we're doing our first New York performances, which are sneak peeks. They're not the entire show, but a big chunk of it.
Uh-huh. So, and talk about who the composers are, because you're working with kind of a little bit of a team of composers you're working with.
Right. Because these have all been written over a long, long period of time, but two-thirds of the songs have music by my longtime collaborator, Janet Hood. Mm-hmm. We wrote Unexpected Joy and Elegies for Angels, Punks, and Raging Queens together, mm-hmm. among others. And then two of the songs have music by Nick Searley of the Skivvies.
Right.
And one of them has music by Ron Melrose, and it's from our first off-Broadway musical called Fortune.
Got it. Okay. And so, and what are, just to give an idea of, I mean, people may not be familiar with your musings, your annual musings.
Right.
So give an idea, give the listeners an idea of what exactly that means. So I think it's kind of clever that on the show poster or the artwork for the show, you're credited with musings and lyrics as opposed to book and lyrics, like your normal credit would be. So give an idea to the audience what exactly you mean by musings and kind of a sample of what that means.
Well, they're written in free verse, which is how is the form I wrote Elegies for Angels, Punks, and Raging Queens in. And there isn't a plot, you know, it's a modular piece, but they're grouped by themes, modern living and technology, relationships, the theater, gay life, and our political situation is a big part of it. So they're short. Many of them are funny. There's a lot of variety. I could even read you some of one of them if you wanted to.
Sure. Yeah. Let's hear maybe one of them just to get an idea, so people get a feel for what you write.
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. Give me one second here. You know, some things I remember that I write mainly because I direct them, and I've heard, like, Elegies, I've directed a number of times, and so I'm very familiar with those pieces, but these not as much. I'll read a little bit of the piece that Justin was reading over the phone to his friends, and it's called Without My Phone. I left home without my phone. Can you even imagine? I got to the subway and went to text you when my mind was blown by the discovery I'd left home without my phone. Who does that? I knew where I was going generally, but the specific address was in my calendar under that day, and guess where that info was stored? I was bored on the ride, couldn't hide my distress that I couldn't do puzzles, couldn't play games, couldn't look up names in that day's news, or peruse breaking stories. I can't even. That gives you a taste of the style.
Well, they're sort of like everyday things that we deal with that are part of just the daily life of living with, as you said, modern technology and how tied to our phones we are, and how dependent we are on them.
Right. And there's pieces about social interaction. There's one about these two guys meeting on the street. They have met a couple of times, introduced by a mutual friend. They don't know each other that well. One of them is gay and one is straight. And there's this whole question of, do we shake hands? Do we hug? Do we kiss? conundrums like that.
Right, exactly. So, when you put together the show, as you said, it's kind of structured on a thematic basis, right?
Right.
So it is, in a sense, it's a review show, but it's not technically a review show. I mean, it's sort of a topical musings show filled with songs. But are there monologues, or is it really not? Because you said it's all done kind of in verse, right?
Yeah, well, they are monologues. I mean, I think of them, the whole show, as a concert. It's just that a lot of the songs, quote, songs, are not sung. They're spoken, spoken word.
Oh, interesting. See, I was trying to get an idea of it's songs, but they're sort of spoken songs in verse. Yeah. So it's definitely not quite, it's not exactly... It is a musical, but it's not quite a musical. It's sort of a hybrid in some way, right?
Well, it is a musical. I mean, there are nine songs.
And
we have a four-piece band that is fantastic. Right. So, and they really, you know, we cast singers. They're all Broadway.
Right. Yeah, we're going to go into the cast in a minute because it's a fantastic lineup of people you have.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, it's a hard show to describe. My husband, Bruce, refers to it as for gay boys who have considered suicide when the rainbow flag is enough. Which, you know, because the parallel for colored girls is the closest I can come in a way to what this is. Although that was more of a dance piece. This is, you know, singing and spoken word.
Right.
But, and it's not by any means all gay, but there is a definitely gay element.
Got it. But that now gives me a really good idea of the concept here, which is really interesting. So talk about actually mounting this like this and putting this together? Because you, like you said, you have an amazing cast of Broadway talent. Three of whom I recognized immediately as Sideshow alumni.
Exactly. That was, you know. Well, this was the challenge in casting this was that we wanted the same performers and band for five performances. We did the first one at Birdland at the end of September. Mm-hmm. And then we have these four every Monday in November at the Laurie Beachman Theater. And, you know, all the performers we approached are very in demand and busy. So finding these four who would be available for those was a challenge. And I did lean on my friends. So we have Erin Davey, who her Broadway credits include creating the role of Little Edie in Grey Gardens and the role of Camilla in Diana. Right. She was also in A Little Night Music with Bernadette Peters and Elaine Stritch, I think at that time. Well, right. Actually, she was in the whole run
of it. Right. With Catherine Zeta-Jones, right.
Angela Lansbury. And she also did Sunday in the Park with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Mm-hmm.
And she co-starred as Violet Hilton in the revival of Sideshow.
Right.
And then we have Ryan Silverman, whose Broadway credits include Raoul in Phantom of the Opera, Billy Flynn in Chicago, and he starred in the male lead as Terry Connor in the Broadway revival of Sideshow. And also Kelvin Moon Lowe, whose Broadway credits include SpongeBob SquarePants, Beetlejuice Twice, mm-hmm. and the revival of Sideshow. And then a performer who is new to me, and we have a fantastic casting director, Stephen DeAngelis, and he recommended her. She's been on Broadway in Groundhog Day, Head Over Heels, and most recently as Catherine Parr in Six, Taylor Iman Jones. She is absolutely wonderful.
She's amazing. I saw her in Head Over Heels. She's uh-huh. fantastic. Fantastic performer. Yeah.
And together, they just, I mean, because everybody's so busy, we had very limited rehearsal time. And the Birdland performance, which was the first one, they just like rose to the occasion and found the rhythm of the piece, which is everything, because mm-hmm. it has a rhythm. And that was absolutely thrilling to me. And of all the performances we've done, I have to say the audiences have just been so engaged with the piece. It's really gratifying.
Cool. And so it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be every Monday in November at the Laurie Beachman.
Right.
And for people who are unfamiliar with the Laurie Beachman Theater and where it's located, because I know you and I had this discussion.
Yes. It's a little challenging to find.
It's a little challenging to find. I know where it is only because I've stumbled across it myself.
Right.
Tell people where to find it. Give the people the address. It's 407 West 42nd Street.
Right.
That doesn't tell you anything.
Right. It's just west of 9th Avenue on the north side of 42nd Street. And it's below the West Bank Cafe, mm-hmm. which has been there. And the room has been there for decades now. In fact, Henry Krieger, the composer of Sideshow and Dreamgirls, picked out the piano that they have on stage, which is a wonderful, grand piano. Mm-hmm. And so to get there, there isn't a sign outside really that says Laurie Beachman Theater. There is a red neon sign that says WBC for West Bank Cafe. You have to go into the cafe, go to the back, and down the stairs to the theater. But the place has new owners. It almost closed during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And these new owners, Tom and Michael Dangora, are fantastic. They had David Rockwell, the esteemed architect and set designer, who he did the JetBlue terminal at TWA at JFK and all the Nobu restaurants worldwide just for assembling. And then he's done the sets for many sideshow Broadway shows, including Sideshow. And he won a Tony for the set for the revival of She Loves Me, which was the only Tony that Hamilton lost that year, except for categories where there was more than one performer nominated. And they hired him to redo the room, and it is absolutely stunning. And the stage is just the best lights and sound. I'm really thrilled that the show is going to be there.
Yeah, it's a fantastic location and a great space. And the West Bank Cafe has sort of come back to life. Because you're right, it did almost close because of the pandemic, and it kind of found a new life, and people came out, the theater community and the New York community kind of came out and saved it. And it's now a fantastic place to eat. So I encourage people to grab a meal there before the show if they can.
You can eat in the theater.
Yeah. It's really, really wonderful. And that's the tricky part, is the theater is located downstairs, but you have to go into the actual restaurant.
Yes. West Bank Cafe, WBC.
Yeah, you have to go into the restaurant to find the stairs to go down into the theater. Right. Which is, because I remember the first time I ever went there, I was like, oh, this is where the Laurie Beachman Theater is.
Right.
I was expecting there to be an entrance out on the street, and it's not. It's actually inside the restaurant, and you wouldn't know it's there.
I saw Lilius White there last week, and I was out on the street before the show, and I had to direct three different parties to where they were going, because they were all looking around, you know. Yeah.
So what do you want audiences to take away from the show when they go to the Laurie Beachman Theater and they see the show on a Monday in November? What are you hoping that they take from this, from the experience of seeing? Has anyone seen My Mind?
Well, some comments I've gotten that I just really appreciate are people saying, all through this, I was thinking, that's exactly what I think. You know, this is what is in my mind. And the title, the opening piece, I mean it literally. Has anyone seen my mind? Because I've definitely lost it and I don't know where I put it. And, but it also has the meaning of, have you seen what is going on in my mind? Mm-hmm. And so those, I think if you come away from it feeling, oh, this is where we are. This is where we are today in our culture, in our thinking, what's going on externally. That's the kind of feedback we're getting, and I couldn't be happier.
And they will laugh.
And they will have
some things to think about, hopefully.
Definitely.
And hopefully see some new different perspectives on things, I hope.
Right.
And once the run at the Beachman is concluded, are there some next steps planned?
Well, we're going to see. The Beachman performances are being produced by the York Theater. And Jim Kierstead, who is the chairman of the board of the York now, has done a wonderful job of revitalizing that institution. So there are some possibilities with them. We'll see what happens, because, you know, like I said, it's a hard show to describe, and we're trying to build an audience, and that is happening. So I feel very, very hopeful. It's a difficult time to get produced. As my agent says, there are still shows backed up in the pipeline from the pandemic.
Right.
That was supposed to open then and now are finally coming to fruition, you know? So it's challenging. And plus, everything takes so much money anymore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not easy. But this also sounds like and I don't know if this was your intent, but it also sounds like a show that once it's up and running, it could be is it a show that you think can be changed over time? Just because
it's
sort of like a topical type of show that can be changed as new things are happening. Bill Russell can have more musings, and musings can be inserted into the show, and you know, it can be constantly revised as it's going along.
Right, because it is very flexible. It is modular. Mm-hmm. But an interesting comment I got from Birdland was this guy who said, so did you write all of this in the last 2 months? Because it all feels so timely. And truthfully, it's been written over decades. I mean, the earliest piece is from the mid-70s. And in a way, I'm thrilled that everything feels so timely, but in another way, I'm alarmed because
things haven't changed.
It makes you think, how much progress have we made here? You know,
right, right. But it is sort. But it is sort of one of those topical. I hate to use the word reviews because it doesn't feel like a review. Well, but it's sort of a topical kind of show that can be flexible enough that it can change. It can change as it's running, which is kind of cool.
And we're doing it with a cast of four. I mean, you could do it with a cast of 40. Like I do elegies sometimes, you know. We've worked out certain tracks that sort of they don't play specific characters all the way through, but there are tracks that sort of make sense together, I think. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. But they switch sometimes, like the men are playing straight characters or gay characters, or you know, it's very flexible that way. So there's a lot of ways it could be cast.
Right, right. And it's funny because it's actually sort of almost a throwback to some of the kind of topical review-ish type shows of the 30s and 40s, and then later on in the 60s, that were this kind of thing, that were based on current events or social events, social issues that were going on, that were produced in New York.
Usually
it's small theaters, not necessarily on Broadway, but they were the same concepts.
Right. Well, there was Nichols and May, who were on Broadway. I mean, it's that kind of, that was specifically comedy routines all the way through, which this is not, but there are a lot of laughs in it, and it's topical in the way that they were.
Cool. So are there any other projects that you're working on that you're willing to share or talk about?
Well, I'm quite far along writing a memoir.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, my goodness. That's interesting.
Yeah. I started it during the pandemic, and I've shared it with some people, and they've been really enthusiastic about it. I mean, I've had a fairly interesting life, you know. I was born and raised in the Black Hills of South Dakota, and my grandparents were cattle ranchers just over the border in Wyoming. Everybody called my father Cowboy. And he was one, riding in rodeos and all of that. So how I landed like a space alien in that environment, a little gay boy, you know, in cowboy country, and then came to the big city and have had some success in what I wanted to do. I've written 16 full-length musicals now, all of which have been produced, some for longer than others, but there's nothing sitting in a drawer that I hasn't seen the light of a stage.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. Congratulations. That's never an easy thing to do, to write a memoir.
Well, no, I've have been telling a lot of these stories over the years. In fact, Bruce can practically recite that. He says you use the exact same language, you know. So now I've just written them down, and it's been a good exercise, and I'm pleased with the response I'm getting.
Cool, that's wonderful. Congratulations! I look forward to reading the final version. So that it's out. You'll have to come back on the show and talk about it once the book is finished. I would love to have you back on that. So let's remind people that they can see, Has Anyone Seen My Mind at the Laurie Beachman Theater? It will be playing every Monday in November. That's November 3rd, 10th, 17th, and 24th at 7 p.m. The Laurie Beachman Theater is located at 407 West 42nd Street in beautiful Manhattan. It is within the West Bank Cafe. Downstairs, you have to go into the restaurant and find the stairs that go down into the beautiful theater, redesigned by David Rockwell. It's a gorgeous space. You will have a wonderful time. And of course, features musings and lyrics by the wonderful Bill Russell, who we've been chatting with, along with music by Janet Hood and Nick Surley and Ron Melrose, and a fantastic cast. Tell people again who the cast is, because this cast is beyond talented. I mean, this is a fantastic Broadway lineup.
Right, they're all Broadway pros. Aaron Davey, Ryan Silverman, Kelvin Moon Lowe, and Taylor Iman Jones.
All top-notch people who are all from major Broadway productions. And I'm thrilled that you have such a great cast. I wish I was going to be in New York. I usually come in November, and I'm not coming. I'm not coming in November this year. So unfortunately, I will not be able to see it. But hopefully we will get a full production of the show sometime soon.
Yes.
And eventually a cast recording of the show.
Yes.
Which would also be very nice. So congratulations, Bill. All the best with Has Anyone Seen My Mind?
Thanks so much, Donald. Such a joy to talk to you.